resources and taking them somewhere, but find a solution that provides this energy to them. And the good thing is that renewable are easily decentralized, and we can easily make sure that people get access to this energy, and we're improving their lives and livelihoods.
Amazing the amount of solar energy you have in Africa, to say the least, but how little solar power is funded in Africa.
And that's very true, because Africa has the potential to provide over 40% of the world capacity or potential for solar, but only 1% currently of the generation is from solar in Africa. What this tells you is that we have opportunities. We have an opportunity here to take advantage of this resource and actually make money out of it, because it's not charity. It's a business opportunity that businesses can do and make a lot of money off without necessarily impacting the people.
Omar Al-Mawi, we want to thank you so much for being with us. He's campaign coordinator of the Stop East African Crude Oil Pipeline campaign, known as ECOP, and co-founder of Decolonize. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez will be giving a speech this Friday at Columbia School of Journalism, reflecting on his 40 years of fighting for racial and social justice in journalism. It begins at 4:10 p.m. on Friday. Check out democracynow.org for details and his two other speeches that he's doing before he leaves New York at the end of the year. We are working with an amazing team. Special thanks to Nermeen Sheikh and Hani Massoud and Sharif Abdelkaddous and Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland, time for your 5 o'clock news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon's treasurer announces his plan to divest pension funds from fossil fuels.
Measure 111's right to health care passes by a narrow margin.
And in national news, Republicans clinch the House majority.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. I'm Jar Salem.
And I'm Althea Billings. Oregon Treasurer Tobias Reed says the state will move to divest state pension funds worth $90 billion from fossil fuels. The Oregon Public Employees Retirement Fund is a pension fund that serves about 160,000 Oregonians. Treasurer Reed has unveiled a framework to stop the pension fund from investing in fossil fuel companies by 2050. The plan would lead to a 50% drop in the state's greenhouse gas emitting assets by 2035 and net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Reed says that the Treasury's primary responsibility is still to maximize financial returns. That won't change. But he also asserts that divestment is good for investors. Reed said, quote, "We're thinking about the returns over decades, over generations, and the balance that comes into that frame is to not be distracted by shorter-term ups and downs." The move comes from pressure around the country to get state governments to pull their investments out of climate crisis-causing industries. New York made a similar promise, no more fossil fuel stocks by 2040. Divest Oregon is a coalition of youth leaders, faith communities, and racial and climate justice organizations that has advocated for Oregon to move away from these investments. By their estimate, in April, they put the state treasury investment at $5.3 billion into the industry, and the real figure could be even higher. They say they welcome the step from the Treasury Department, but that there's more that needs to be done, and that the timeline doesn't reflect the urgency of the issue. Divest Oregon's Susan Palmiter said, quote, "It is too little too late. Crucially, the framework does not end new investments in fossil fuels or remove the worst emitters. The Treasury is required to make long-term investments, and continued fossil fuel investment locks us into financial and climate risk."
Oregonians have voted in a measure creating a constitutional right to affordable health care. Measure 111 will make Oregon the first state in the nation with a constitutional obligation to provide access to affordable health care to all its residents. It's somewhat similar to the constitutional guarantee of a public kindergarten through 12th grade education. The outcome was too close to call last week, but the yes votes eventually took the lead, passing 50.7% to 49.3% in unofficial returns. The language of the measure states, quote, "It is the obligation of the state to ensure that every resident of Oregon has access to cost-effective, clinically appropriate, and affordable health care as a fundamental right," end quote. However, it does not spell out what the state must do to meet its new constitutional obligation, or define what access to affordable health care actually means. It will be up to the legislature to create a plan and figure out how to pay for it. It does not implement any new taxes. The measure does say that state funding for health care must be balanced against funding for public schools and other essential public services. Measure 111 also does not set Oregon up for a single-payer system. Legal experts say the amendment will allow Oregonians who do not have access to affordable health care to try to sue the state. Measure 111 was nearly defeated. It was not able to gather national attention or major out-of-state dollars. It was also not a top priority for state Democrats, who faced serious challenges in the governor's race and in two close congressional districts. The Right to Health Care PAC supported the measure with just under $100,000. In contrast, Measure 114, the gun control measure that passed by a similar margin, had millions of dollars in backing. A constitutional right to health care was a lifelong project of State Representative Mitch Greenlick, who tried at least 8 times to send a proposal to the voters. Greenlick died in 2020, and his Democratic colleagues referred the measure to voters in honor of his work.
Sheriffs in 3 Oregon counties, Lynn, Union, and Sherman, have said they will not enforce the state's new gun control law, Measure 114. Union County Sheriff Cody Bowen wrote, quote, "This is an infringement on our constitutional rights and will not be enforced by my office," end quote. The Oregon State Sheriffs Association, which opposed the measure, has told state officials this summer that it expected its members to uphold all laws, including those created by popular vote. The law will require gun buyers to obtain safety training and a permit to get a gun, and it bans the sale of gun magazines holding more than 10 rounds. It's supposed to go into effect 30 days after the vote is certified. Expected lawsuits, though, may delay the measure's implementation.
Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week recognizes the struggles many across the country are going through. In Oregon, events to help out the local community are planned in Eugene, which has one of the highest houselessness rates in the country. Eric Tegetoff has the details.
As the cold weather settles in and some families make plans for the holidays, others are recognizing Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week this week. Hiba Hamad is the University of Oregon chapter chair for the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. She notes that Eugene has one of the highest homelessness rates in the country. Hamad says her organization is highlighting some of the services available for people struggling on U of O's campus, and also putting together medical kits for people experiencing homelessness in the community.
A lot of houseless folks are requesting medical supplies because, especially as it gets colder, when they get cuts and bruises and things like that, and they can't take care of it, then a lot of them end up getting really bad injuries or even, unfortunately, pass away. That's been a recent issue.
Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week was founded at Villanova University in 1975. Groups in more than 700 locations across the U.S. are holding education, service, and fundraising events this week. The issue of hunger especially extends to U of O students. A report from the 2020-2021 academic year found that 22% of students were food insecure, more than twice the national rate. Hamad says with the increased cost of goods, such as groceries, more students are considering applying for federal food benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP.
A lot of students were hesitant because even if they were struggling, they were like, I don't want to take away from other people. I don't know if I am struggling enough. But I think especially as everything is getting more expensive, it's really starting to affect students.
Hamad says the university is helping students out with this issue, including with produce drops and a free student pantry. She says they're also currently working on creating SNAP benefit workshops to help students apply for the program. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The crypto billionaire who tried to buy an Oregon congressional seat earlier this year has gone bankrupt, along with his companies. Sam Bankman-Fried was once hailed as, quote, the world's most generous billionaire. In the Oregon primary, he spent $11 million to back newcomer Carrick Flynn in the House District 6 primary. Flynn failed to defeat Andrea Salinas in the Democratic primary, and Salinas has now gone on to win the seat in Congress. Bankman-Fried's crypto exchange company, FTX, and his crypto trading firm, Alameda Research, declared bankruptcy, along with 130 other affiliated companies. Billions of dollars in customer crypto assets were lost by Bankman-Fried for his unscrupulous dealings. He loaned those assets to his own crypto trading firm, which made risky trades with no backing, losing billions. When customers heard of this, they wanted out, but the trading platform didn't have their assets. It amounted to an old-fashioned bank run. As for the candidate he backed in Oregon, Flynn was friends with Bankman-Fried's brother, but told Willamette Week he had, quote, never been in contact with Sam at all.
Former President Donald Trump announced his candidacy for U.S. president in the 2024 election. During his speech, Trump called for a complete end to early and absentee voting and said elections should be conducted via paper ballots only. Trump supporter Senator Lindsey Graham said, quote, Trump's speech, contrasting his policies and results against the Biden administration, charts a winning path for him in the primaries and general election, end quote. However, in the light of last week's elections, where many of the candidates Trump endorsed lost, Republican Party officials and lawmakers were hoping Trump would delay his announcement until after the Georgia Senate runoff in early December. When asked if Trump's announcement was good for the Republican Party, his former White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney said on CNN, quote, No, I don't. I think he's the only Republican who could lose, end quote. In addition, Republicans won control of the U.S. House today after Mike Garcia was declared the winner of his race in California. This secured the requisite 218th seat for a Republican majority in that chamber. This flips the House from Democratic control to Republican for the next Congress. The full scope of the GOP's majority may not be clear for several more days to weeks, as votes in some competitive races are still being counted. Democrats will finish with at least 210 seats, but no more than 217.
Katie Hobbs will be Arizona's next governor. A lame duck session may be Democrats' last chance to use their majority in both houses of Congress, and Republican governors admit they need to inspire young voters. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We chose sanity over chaos. And we chose unity over division. We chose a better Arizona. And we chose democracy.
Democrat Katie Hobbs is projected to win the race for Arizona governor, defeating her Republican opponent, former TV news anchor Carrie Lake. The high-profile race was marked by sharp rhetoric by Lake, an election denier, and protesters contesting the results, which became more clear a week after Election Day as vote totals from the state's most populous counties came in. Hobbs is the state's first Democratic governor since Janet Napolitano in 2006. In celebrating his party's midterm win to retain a narrow majority in the U.S. Senate, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said Democrats are going to continue working across party lines, but will stay true to the party's principles.
What happened last night with Kerry Lake, that's proof positive that this MAGA stuff doesn't work. She was a great communicator. She still lost in a purple state.
Schumer added he hopes Republicans and Democrats can continue to work in a bipartisan way and make compromises when possible. Despite several races across the country still waiting to be called, it's likely the GOP will gain control of the House. For Democrats, the lame duck session may be their last chance to use their unified control of Congress between now and when the new Congress is seated in January. One of the big ticket items on the table is the Same-Sex Marriage Act, noted by Washington Senator Patty Murray.
After Roe v. Wade was overturned, I have heard from constituents back home who are concerned and worried about Justice Thomas's suggestion that their right to marry who they love could be ripped away.
The House Republican Conference voted to re-elect House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy its leader, which puts McCarthy in line to be Speaker of the House if the GOP is able to secure the majority. Meanwhile, Senate Republicans will be holding leadership elections today. After failing to help secure a majority in the Senate, Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell is being challenged in the race for Minority Leader by Florida's Rick Scott.
I think the outcome is pretty clear. I want to repeat again, I have the votes. I will be elected. The only issue is whether we do it sooner or later.
The election results, which dashed hopes of a Republican red wave, were also discussed at the Republican Governors Association conference. The group talked about the appeal of party policies and messaging. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem said inspiration from GOP leaders was lacking and stressed more needs to be done to reach younger voters.
We're not inspiring that generation right now. What still moved people was your opponent was worse than you. They didn't necessarily like us. They just, their opponent was worse.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Kay Rambo, the editor-in-chief at Street Roots, about the newest issue of the paper out today, the Winter Resource Guide, where to get help and where to give help. Stick around at 7 for Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. Tonight's weather will be clear and windy, with a low of 34 degrees. A wind advisory is in effect for Greater Portland and the Vancouver areas, with winds between 15 and 25 miles per hour. The advisory lasts until Friday morning. Weather officials say there are minor risks of unsecured objects getting blown around, and falling tree limbs may result in a few power outages. Tomorrow's weather will be clear and chilly, with a high of 50 degrees. Today in history, in 1945, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, was founded. It's a specialized agency of the UN focused on promoting world peace through international cooperation on arts, education, sciences, and culture. The quote of the day is from Audrey Azoulay, the Director General of UNESCO, who said, "To be able to freely build one's identity, drawing on various cultural sources, and to be able to develop one's heritage in a creative way are the foundations of a peaceful and sustainable development of our societies."
Two people in southeast Poland near the Ukrainian border were killed by a military rocket yesterday. Polish President Andrzej Duda said the deaths were caused by, quote, an S-300 rocket made in the Soviet Union, an old rocket, and there's no evidence it was launched by the Russian side. He added that it was, quote, highly probable that it was fired by Ukrainian anti-aircraft defense and unfortunately fell on Polish territory. NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg said, quote, "Let me be clear. This is not Ukraine's fault. Russia bears the ultimate responsibility as it continues its illegal war against Ukraine," end quote.
California has unveiled a statue of Miwok leader Bill Franklin, replacing a monument that honored the person who founded the mission system in California that enslaved Native Americans. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week in California, state lawmakers broke ground on a statue of a Miwok cultural leader. It's located at the state's Capitol Park, where a statue of a Catholic missionary once stood. Christina Onnested reports.
California Native tribes and state lawmakers gathered at Capitol Park in Sacramento for the groundbreaking of a statue paying tribute to a Northern California Miwok tribe. The new statue will replace a statue of Junipero Serra, who founded the mission system in California that enslaved Native Americans. It was torn down in 2020. Assemblyman James Ramos is the only Native American in the state legislature.
We can now commit ourselves to changing the why behind a shameful history that needs to come forward, a shameful history that needs to be taught in history books, a shameful history that needs to be attested to in the college system, but also We need to make sure that we lift up our elders and our ancestors and the resiliency that runs deep within us to make sure their voice is always being heard, because that's the reason we're here today.
The statue will honor a Northern California Miwok leader and cultural dancer, Bill Franklin. I'm Christina Onnested, reporting from California for National Native News.
In Southeast Alaska, Monday, a number of Native organizations celebrated Walter Sobolev Day. The Tlingit leader was born on November 14th, 1908, and was the first Alaska Native person to be ordained as a minister in the Presbyterian Church. The Alaska Heritage Institute observed his birthday with a panel discussion in Juneau about the Presbyterian Church's decision to close Sobolev's church in 1963. After the church was torn down, services moved to the Northern Light United Presbyterian Church, which had a mostly white congregation. Sobolev, who gave sermons in his native language, never spoke out against the church. Earlier this year, the Native Ministries Committee from Northern Light successfully petitioned National Presbyterian leaders to make a formal apology. But Myra Munson, an attorney who worked with the group, fought for more than an apology.
But if that's all it is, doesn't mean anything.
In a recent agreement, the church will receive $1 million over the coming years to make reparations, money that will be spent to promote healing and education about the harm of racism. Rosita Worrell, president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, thanked the Native Ministries Committee for their work.
I know that this story, the story of Dr. Sobolev, the things that happened to him, and what you have done, you know, to rectify those wrongs, will be living on through our children as they learn about our history.
As part of the reparations, the church has also been renamed Kunehiti, which means House of Healing. U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is traveling to New Mexico and Arizona this week to meet tribal leaders. The secretary wants to draw awareness to road safety issues, which impact tribal communities disproportionately. According to the U.S. Department of Transportation, American Indian and Alaska Native people have roadway fatality rates more than double the national rate on a per population basis. He'll discuss roadway safety and talk about plans to invest in local infrastructure. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Climate change is causing substantial economic damage, according to recent research. Five countries have cost the world $6 trillion in global warming losses. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Climate change is a global problem. So when one country produces carbon pollution, it causes warming in other countries too. That can cause economic losses, for example, by making it harder to grow crops. Christopher Callahan is a PhD student in the Climate Modeling and Impacts Group at Dartmouth College. His team analyzed how much individual countries have contributed to global warming, and the effects of that warming on other countries and their economies.
We found that individual major emitters have caused substantial economic changes across the globe.
According to the study, warming caused by just five countries, the U.S., China, Russia, Brazil, and India, has caused $6 trillion in global economic losses. And those losses have not been suffered equally. The burden has fallen disproportionately on low-income countries that have contributed the least to the problem. Callahan says the study could be used to help hold high-polluting nations accountable.
Our work really lends additional urgency to what we all know is already necessary, which is substantial near-term action to reduce our emissions to meet the commitments the United States and other countries have made in the international arena.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
As 2022 begins to wind down, there's a heightened call for scam prevention. After record numbers of scams were reported last year, experts want the public to have the tools and knowledge to avoid having their money or identity stolen by someone they thought was legitimate. Mike Moen has more in North Dakota.
Law enforcement and consumer advocates hope 2022 doesn't end with another record year of financial losses from scams. As part of the fight against imposters, North Dakotans are being given a chance to learn about prevention. The Federal Trade Commission says last year, people lost a record $5.8 billion to a range of schemes. That's a 70% increase over the previous year. Paul Greenwood, a retired prosecutor and fraud expert, says in the digital age, scammers are becoming more sophisticated, and they're getting help.
You add in what we call money mules, where there's a third party that is being used to conduit the money. The scammers enjoy so much anonymity, and it's sometimes difficult for law enforcement to actually trace where the money has ended up.
Greenwood says all age groups are vulnerable, but the romance scam has taken hold among older Americans. That's where the criminal uses a fake online identity to gain a person's affection and trust and winds up stealing their money. Experts say a red flag is that scammers usually only share a photo and don't agree to video chats. Aside from the efforts of scammers, Greenwood attributes the major spike in scam losses to several factors from the past couple of years.
The number of cases of fraud is increasing rapidly, primarily because of the pandemic, isolation, and the access to the internet for so many older adults.
And as more people are targeted, he says it's important for the public to not shame victims so they can feel emboldened to speak up. On a broader scale, he suggests law enforcement needs to be more proactive in breaking up crime rings that are behind common scams around the world. Mike Moen, Prairie News Service.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael expects the unpredictable.
Last week's elections didn't go as the experts predicted or as many of us feared, though for the first time in my 45 years in Oregon, I'll be represented allegedly by a Republican, while nationally some races aren't even settled yet. So now we can start hearing expert predictions on 2024, because Donnie Trump, remember him, was feeling neglected and hopes that being a future candidate will protect him from being indicted on past crimes. Maybe Al Capone should have run for mayor of Chicago. It'll be harder to know what Portland's mayor may have done or said wrong, as thousands of his and other officials' texts never got archived. Whoops! And it's whoops in Poland, where two folks got killed by a Russian missile, but no international crisis because they weren't the missile's targets. As to our planet's 8th billion citizens, whose birth I hope was intentional and beloved, welcome to this unpredictable, no-guarantees world. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and myself, Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moen, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Sojourner Truth Radio with Margaret Prescott, bringing you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. Then at 11, tune in for Between the Covers. Host Abby Marr interviews poet, Igbo priest, and humanitarian Chris Abani on his latest poetry collection, Smoking the Bible. It's an elegy to his deceased brother and an exploration of love, loss, exile, and rebirth. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. Thank you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We're speaking with the editor-in-chief of Street Roots about their latest issue, the Winter Resource Guide. We'll be right back.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
I'm speaking with Kay Rambo, the editor-in-chief of Street Roots, about the newest edition of the paper, the Winter Resource Guide to Multnomah County. Welcome, Kay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So this issue is a partnership with Rose City Resource on where to get help and where to give help. What is Rose City Resource?
Rose City Resource is another program that Street Roots operates. It's separate from the paper, but they put out a resource guide twice a year, once just before January and again around July. But it is a very thorough and comprehensive list of resources in Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties, covering everything from shelters to medical to food stamp assistance, stuff like that.
So what does this winter resource guide cover in the latest edition of Street Roots?
Yeah, it captures a very small fraction of the full Rose City resource. It's specific to Multnomah County, and it's really kind of focused on some of those most immediate needs like shelter, food, clothes, and healthcare. And so that's kind of the where to get help in Multnomah County section. And then Sophie, who's the Rose City Resource Manager,